After sexual harassment at ESPN interrupted her career of anchor and legal analyst Adrienne Warrens, the attorney looked to write a guide to help in shutting down workplace sexual harassment so it doesn't derail one's career or life. Her new book, Staying in the Game, is a sexual harassment survival guide that looks to cover everything from how to identify harassers and spot sexual harassment hotbeds to how to best leverage media and to lawyer up, all while staying sane and surviving cyber scandal through the process. Adrienne Warrens is an attorney and television host. She was a litigator for 8 years before entering broadcast journalism, a former anchor and legal analyst at ESPN. She became the first on-air personality to sue ESPN for sexual harassment. And we welcome Adrienne Warrens to the roundtable this morning. Adrienne, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to want to write this ultimately this guide, this survival guide?
Well, there was nothing out there like it. Everything out there is either a memoir or a legal reference manual. And, you know, being a lawyer, I get the legal stuff, but the reality is sexual harassment, it's just bullying in the workplace based on sex or gender. And it's rarely, rarely, rarely ever a legal issue. And so just to be able to help people understand what it really is and how you can combat it in a way where you stay on top is so important.
So when you talk about combating it, when did you first realize it? I mean, obviously, to bring you to a point of filing and suing ESPN, give us a sense of that situation.
Well, you know, again, because it's so rare, fewer than 1% of instances of sexual harassment ever end up being filed as a lawsuit. And over 5 million American workers are sexually harassed each year. And so, you know, you hit a certain point where you have to decide for yourself how you would want to proceed. And as we know, generally with any kind of litigation efforts, people try to resolve things outside of the courts initially. And if that doesn't work, you have to make the choice. Do I want to stand up and take a stand, or do I want to let it go and move on with my life? And this just seemed like the right time to go ahead and take a stand.
You ultimately, the case was ultimately settled, correct?
Correct.
And how do you feel about that in the sense of, I mean, I'm not getting into what the details of the settlement are, but with settling, does that help improve the environment at that place that you left?
I would say that it does, but it's not necessarily the impetus that actually makes change. Because as we know from the media situation and the changes that have been put in place there, there are changes being made that will happen regardless of whether you sue or not.
Right.
What actually changes companies is public exposure. They're not afraid to litigate in courts. They have essentially lobbied and set up laws in their favor. And for instance, like the federal government has put a $300,000 cap on damages, compensatory and punitive, for Title VII claims if it's a big employer. So 300 grand isn't a big deal to have to pay out if you end up losing in court. So companies do not care, really, if they get sued. It's largely if the public knows and if it becomes a part of the media empire and the court of public opinion. That's when they care, because then you have issues with advertisers and viewers who no longer want to contribute to your organization because they don't feel like you treat individuals with respect.
I want to get into the meat of the book in just a second, but I want to stay with ESPN for two questions. One is here is a network that had a reputation. I mean, it had a reputation. Books had been written. People had certainly other people had come forward and said that there were issues. You were indeed the first to sue, and a lot of concerns about it being a boys' club or like a locker room, really, more than anything else. Was that your take on it when you walked into the place?
Well, the thing is, it's like, for instance, in my background in particular, I came from law, and
right.
I knew law That's all I knew was law. So I had always worked in generally very polished places where that behavior goes on, but I did not interact with it considerably and did not have those kind of problems. And also, too, you know, I think that sometimes with larger companies, there's a mentality of you're lucky to be here. And thus, the policing aspect of behavior like sexual harassment, it doesn't happen. And thus, the gravity of the problem can just continue to grow and be out of control at certain environments, but people are too afraid to speak up because, of course, they don't want to be banned from media for life, et cetera. So I think that it happens, well, I know that it happens in any industry and in every workplace. It's just a matter of how do you address it and how do you make it stop?
I want to, and again, my last question on ESPN, but, you know, to me, the disparity here, which I just find mind-boggling, is you have there were allegations that, and apparently they were there were allegations against a personality at ESPN, Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico answered to those, and then he went on and took over a role, a very prominent role at NBC. Almost, and then taking over for the Olympics, almost at the same time that they ousted Matt Lauer. And NBC said that they were aware of the situation at ESPN, but he had changed. I don't know. Does that not would that cut it if that had happened a year later?
You know what? I think it's an individual analysis and really what company kind of culture you want to set for your workplace. Because I definitely do believe some people change, because the reality is that it is bullying. And one of the primary kind of determinants of whether an individual engages in sexual harassment, so pretty much whether culture. So they could be in an environment where they're just fine and they're not predatory, but then they could be in an environment that caters to that. So I can't speak to whether Mike Tirico has changed or not. I can't speak to NBC in particular, other than what we know has come out of that environment. But I can definitely say that it speaks to the nature of that company and what they really value in the signal that they're sending to their employees and the world.
Had you ever worked with him?
No, not directly. I did not.
Okay. In the book, you talk about you have the first chapter is knowing the score, your instincts, and the uphill battle, and I think that's really, I mean, that's a lot of what you've been talking about. But how do you make it so? How do we change a culture so that it doesn't always have to be the uphill battle for women in the workplace?
It's a matter of largely retaliation. You have to put people in situations where they want to speak up, as unfortunately we're seeing very much right now, and these stories coming up about women who were in situations where they turned men down or they rejected them, and then all of a sudden you didn't hear from or see those women again. And so we need to have environments where people are encouraged to speak up, and also that bystanders are encouraged to intervene. And that all comes from company culture and how the behavior is treated. Because again, this is just bullying. So, you know, companies treat embezzlement, hopefully seriously. They should treat sexual harassment just the same in terms of making it clear that the behavior is not acceptable.
You write a chapter in the book, it's called Paying the Price, the Cost of Sexual Harassment to Employers and to You. What was the price you felt that you paid personally?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I lost a considerable amount of my economic independence, having left the law where I was paid a considerable amount for a lower paying job with the understanding that I would receive the career at the end. And also the investment I made moving from Los Angeles to Connecticut. And then on top of that, you know, unfortunately, we still live in a culture where standing up for your rights is problematic and you become blacklisted or people don't want to work with you. And so it's extremely expensive to take a stand, but it is very, very important, and it's important for the people to come. And essentially, all the rights that we have today, all of us, is because somebody stood up. And it is expensive, but hey, it's a lot better knowing that at least the legacy that I'll leave behind is one in which that inspires and encourages people and creates more opportunities.
I mean, and you point out in that chapter, because you go on and talk about the situation with Steve Wynn and at the Wynn casinos, that sexual harassment is bad for business. Not only can it kill careers, but it can kill companies.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that is a change, right? That's something that we're seeing as a real change.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're completely and totally right. And I'm a business person. You know, I represented companies and individuals, so I am big on maximizing income. Of course, doing it the right way, because you don't want to be in a situation where you get public backlash, like we saw with Wynn Resorts. So the fact that you are investing in these harass holes, despite the knowledge that we know and the studies that have been conducted to show that you are losing money, turnover costs, lack of productivity. Because, again, it's bullying in the work environment. People do not work well when they feel like they're being oppressed and bullied. So the fact that companies aren't addressing it adequately is just unfortunate because, again, I like the idea of companies thriving and doing well. And if they truly valued making money, then they would actually focus on ridding this social and workplace ill.
Why do you think that many companies, as you say, if they're in the business of making money, then why would they tolerate harassment in any way, shape, or form?
Well, the vast majority of companies are run or funded by men, and men don't really find sexual harassment to be all that much of an offensive, bad kind of thing. And so the unfortunate aspect is that sometimes it becomes your culture. And as a result of that, people will defend their culture to the end of time, unfortunately. And then also, too, there are tax benefits involved in, like, for instance, legal fees, above the line tax deduction. So that can actually shrink a company's tax bill. And then your insurance will cover maybe a sexual harassment complaint. And then also, too, as I mentioned, money limits in terms of damages. So the system has been rigged and set up so that it doesn't discourage sexual harassment. So the vast majority of these companies also don't discourage it. But I would definitely submit that the companies that really want to soar and do extraordinarily well are the ones who are paying attention to it.
In writing the book, you talk about documenting this. So for people who have been harassed and are concerned, what do you advise they start in the paper trail of being able to get the information that they need so that the person who is being harassed can have, hopefully, a positive ending to that work relationship?
People need to just acknowledge the reality that a situation is happening. So many people want to doubt themselves, or they allow themselves, unfortunately, to be gaslit about what's going on. But if you start from the onset to recognizing, I don't feel comfortable, I'm going to document this, and you make that a habit to document, then it can help reduce a situation from being he said, she said, to being here are the facts and here is the support. So nobody can deny what's going on, because people, unfortunately, often find themselves in these he said, she said situations, as we see playing out in the media with Joe Biden and Tara Reid right now. And it is just so difficult to overcome. And especially there is an unfortunate presumption that women cannot be trusted or are inaccurate in some way or emotional, when really the facts need to come out, and thus you have to document, because it's not ever going to be a one-off situation. It is a pattern of behavior. Bullies don't just one day stop.
Just because you brought up the Joe Biden, Tara Reid issue, is that, I mean, there's a case where the story He denies it. There have been at least two versions of her story, but it seems that one of the biggest problems is just time, right? It happened so long ago.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. When you document what has occurred and what is going on, then it helps preserve the events, and so. Memories do fade, and also trauma can cause a loss in memory and difficulty to recall who was there, who witnessed it, what happened, where I was, and the fact that sexual harassment stories and any kind of stories that involve high-profile people engaged in misconduct are often torn apart because everyone likes to deny that things happen. And so to have adequate documentation, and also the fact that we can save and store things digitally now. There's literally no reason not to take advantage of the fact that you can record what is going on, and so that there can be no doubts and no disagreements later on.
Adrian Lawrence is the author of the new book, Staying in the Game, the Playbook for Beating Workplace Sexual Harassment. Adrian, thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, Adrian Lawrence is the author of Staying in the Game, the Playbook for Beating Workplace Sexual Harassment. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.